Coming up next on the Canadian Tech Podcast, a new app from Microsoft, a new phone from BlackBerry, and a very large new drive from Samsung. All this and more coming up next on the Canadian Tech Podcast. Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 50, for Monday, August the 1st, 2016, sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, happy Simcoe Day. It actually is in Ontario. It's a civic holiday here, so most of the country has a bank holiday, which is why we're doing this on a Monday.
Yep. I don't really have much to say about this mythical stat holiday that not everybody actually gets off, and I saw some talk earlier about Emancipation Day, which some people call it, and, you know, it doesn't really mean a whole lot up here. So
I know,
it's a day off. I'm enjoying the day off, but I'm not celebrating it in any way.
There you go. Me either. I celebrated by sleeping in a little bit today. So
yeah, and I had some famous Grouse Scotch whiskey earlier.
Excellent. Excellent choice. Good stuff. Good stuff. We're going to get you civilized, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Excellent.
Next, Glenfiddich.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Then we'll get you some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, moving right on. We got some breaking news and some sad breaking news. Seymour Papert, I told you I was probably going to screw that up. He's actually passed away. Now, he's known recently for he was very much the theorist behind one laptop per child. Mm-hmm. But also, he was one of the co-creators via MIT of the Logo language, which featured Turtle graphics. And I remember that in the early 80s. On an Atari 800, and I know Apple IIs at the time had it and stuff like that. So a lot of people around my age cut their programming chops with that language. It was designed for kids, and it was actually a very interesting thing. But yeah, he was what we call one of the old founders of the net, mm-hmm. or the old tech guys. Didn't make a ton of money, but again, really had a lot of influence. He actually sustained a serious brain injury after being hit by a motorcycle in 2006. But again, he lived a good life. 88.
Yeah, he did. Also amongst contemporaries, he would be known as someone who had a big influence behind Lego Mindstorms.
That's right.
Yeah. And, so rest in peace. Our condolences to his family.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, the Logo Foundation's also accepting donations on behalf. They're a nonprofit organization as well.
Yeah.
So, and if you're interested in that, you can look at that in the link that we have in the show notes.
Right.
Okay, our sympathies to the family. Anyway, moving on. Microsoft released a new app this week and on the iOS App Store, and there is going to be an Android version coming, I hear.
Good.
of course, called Microsoft Pick, P-I-X. And this app's supposed to be, according to Microsoft, smarter than the stock iOS camera app. Now, at the moment, it's only available for iPhone 5S and above and for iPad Air. So both my mobile Apple devices can't run it. Now, Derek, you said you downloaded it on the iPad. What do you think of it so far?
I like it. I haven't played with it a whole lot. I took a couple of selfies, which I promptly deleted.
Oh, sorry. Was that my outside voice?
Yeah. And but I do want to take it outside at some point this week and actually do some pics, live image things, and take a burst, see what sort of cinemagraph or live photo type results I can end up with. So I'm really interested. So far it looks really, really neat. I've seen some of the side-by-side tests. Mixed bag about whether or not it's better or not, but for the most part I think it's just great overall that the research lab at Microsoft, which does a whole ton of things, released this direct to the App Store instead of trying to get it baked into some sort of other app or use case or what have you. Some of the side by sides with the stock camera app, I gotta say, at least in certain aspects, are definitely better.
Agreed. I definitely find the one where they've got a bright background, it really handles the exposure better.
Yeah, it does. And one in particular where there's a landscape scene with a tall evergreen tree and some grass. The mm-hmm. sky gets a little overexposed, but the grass and the tree itself look much, much better, or the trees look much better than with yep. the stock app. So certainly it's still a mixed bag. It's definitely a beta, but I'd say it's a pretty good beta. It looks nice.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely something I'll try once I get my hands on a newer iOS device. And as you say, good for Microsoft for doing this. And again, as I always say, it might, you know, inspire Apple that they have some competition to, you know, spur on some bit more there. That's what competition's about, and that's what we like. So, mm-hmm. exactly. Okay. Now, this one I found on the CBC. This is employers now responsible for protecting their workers on social media. And there's a couple of aspects to this. As you know, we all know, there's a lot of big companies will have social media accounts, and a lot of the times it's related to customer support. And I can imagine what it must be like working for some of these companies, particularly the phone companies, Air Canada, stuff like that, transit systems, where yeah, you don't get too often people saying, "Hey, we really appreciated our Rogers bill this month. It was just right on," and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, needless to say, these accounts and the people, the teams who help run it, get quite a bunch of complaints. The problem is we're not talking about that. We're talking about where it crosses the line and people are starting to call in death threats or a barrage of hateful tweets, or if they happen to find out a staff member, they start harassing them on their own personal Twitter account and stuff like that. So what this decision really, really makes, you know, really makes clear is that a company really has to take steps, whether it's through policies, you know, just reminding their staff. Because the problem is quite often you get companies where, you know, the staff are told, oh, the customer is always right. And if your customer is frankly being a jerk and being totally unreasonable and being hateful, well, you know, the employee shouldn't have to put up with that. It's like right. the same thing in real life. If I go to a bank and, you know, I'm annoyed because the bank did something silly, I don't have the right to personally berate the teller or stuff like that. They have, you know, the right, and I am sure you, they'll probably do it, throw me out of the branch. And it's just kind of a reminder of this thing, you know. Now, you know, there is a kind of a mention, and this is where I say there's two parts. I noticed there's a mention, you know, where some people are saying, okay, does that mean if I take a picture of a bus driver asleep, I'm not allowed to post it? Well, you know, myself as a photographer, if it's in public, fine. But, yeah. you know, there's a line. What do you think?
Certainly, I have certainly vented frustrations on Twitter before to Wind, Rogers, other companies I've dealt with, and for me personally, that's usually a last resort. Right. I've called the company, I've dealt with live chat support, nothing's happening, and so now I'm taking this public because now I'm really upset. And you know, that's not the way everybody treats this, but certainly, I suspect a lot of people put up with a lot before they finally decide to, you know, potentially put themselves in the line of fire from others, and go public and, you know, tweet or Facebook post about something. Yeah, I mean, generally, if you're in public, whether you like it or not, there is no expectation of privacy.
Exactly.
You know, the City of London, for example, has a few cameras downtown. They don't seem to work because they're, well, they were installed a long time ago and the video quality is quite poor.
Yeah, it's absolute crap.
So, but regardless, they are there and, you know, they're pointed at public intersections. So you can't really complain about that sort of thing. And, you know, if I can take a picture of a bus driver from my car or from outside, anywhere outside the bus, sleeping or smoking a cigar or tweeting or like texting and driving and that sort of thing, well, you know, you're breaking the law and it's in plain sight. So yeah, you can't, again, that's your job. You're supposed to be a professional driver in that case. So no, you can't expect privacy. I sympathize. You know, the TTC has a lot of customers, certainly many of them very, very passionate about good transit, on-time transit. The LTC has a similar problem where, yeah, people are going to be passionate or angry or what have you towards the account. Now, I think the representative from BZ Ferries here makes a really good point of saying, if harassing comments are made, but they do not pertain to the issue or conversation, they are generally ignored. If anything personal comes up, the conversation is taken offline if possible. And most, end quote, and most companies I tweet with, especially Rogers before I left, certainly would say, hey, you know, DM us instead. We can help you better that way.
Right.
I agree. Yes, I can send you my account number or, you know, confirm I am who I am or what have you. And ultimately, that is the best thing to do with social media, is direct those customers, happy or sad or angry, to a conversation, a communication mechanism where you can have a better control of the situation and where you can actually verify, you know, specific details and deal with them one-on-one instead of dealing with them in the public the whole time. And hopefully, if you're good and you do solve the problem, they will come back and say, thanks so much for helping me deal with this. And I've seen that many, many times as well. And I've done that as well. So, I mean, unfortunately, there are certain types of companies or organizations who are going to be far more prone to this than I am, manning the Clever Host or the Olio Digital Labs account, or you or I manning the Canadian Tech Podcast account. But ultimately, you know, you could be working for a company that handles a lot of situations very poorly. And unfortunately, as a customer service representative, it's your job to help temper the situation and then help resolve it. And sometimes customers go too far. Absolutely. But hopefully, you know, everybody's getting some good training on how to deal with public arguments, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Public shame. I don't know of any time where someone's been threatened someone's life or be totally rude and get their way. So, but people still try and do that.
Yeah, no, they absolutely do. I mean, I get angry because, like I said, for me, it's my last resort. It's my last resort to go, oh my God, Rogers, your tech support sucks. What the heck? And
exactly.
Unfortunately, for some reason, the social media customer service reps seem to be far more empowered than some others, at least at the time when I was dealing with them, to deal with disgruntled customers. It shouldn't have to go that far, but
regardless, that's
why I started doing this. I'm like, oh, so everybody else seems to be getting much better results taking this public through Twitter. I'm going to do it too.
Exactly. Okay, so moving on. Speaking of Rogers, they also didn't have a good week. I hadn't heard of this story until you threw the link up. So a little outfit called Sugar Mobile, and I'm going to let you go run with this.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit of backstory. I actually got a, what's that service? Clout with a K. A clout perk to try out Sugar Mobile last year. Fortunately, I didn't have an unlocked phone. I didn't want to bother unlocking my phone because they do give you a SIM card. And so I didn't actually try it out. But Sugar Mobile is actually owned by a company from the Northwest Territories called Ice Wireless.
Okay.
And they thought, hey, we've got all these roaming agreements already with Bell, Rogers, Telus, etc. So why don't we roll an MVN, kind of like a mobile virtual network operator, an MVNO company, to you know, potentially gain some revenue outside of the North, and so they did that last year, and Rogers didn't like it. Sugar Mobile offers some very very slim, very inexpensive plans. They start at $19 a month. But you only get, I think it's 200 megabytes of data, and on 3G, and another 200 or 300 minutes to talk on the phone. So you don't get much, but their software does facilitate really easy handoff onto Wi-Fi networks, which is kind of their shtick, is, yeah, we'll give you a little bit of data, but ultimately we're hoping you do most of your calling over, most of your calling and traffic over Wi-Fi networks, because, you know, you're probably within range of one anyway. And right. certainly in this area, that's true a lot of the time, whether it's the London lawn or a Starbucks or work or what have you. But anyway, Rogers decided to go to the CRTC and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. Our agreement with ICE Wireless does not extend to Sugar Mobile and this, you know, new plan that they're putting together. Like, this is essentially a competing service. Well, unfortunately, the CRTC disagreed, at least for now, and would not impose any sort of injunctions or what have you on Sugar Mobile / ICE Wireless. Saying, you know, that would effectively say that they were breaching the roaming agreement. The CRTC decided to keep everything as is. They're still going to, like, officially rule on this at some point. But in the meantime, Sugar Mobile is allowed to keep doing what they're doing. And Rogers has agreed to leave the agreement in place until a final official decision was made.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, again, part of the challenges in the North. Another one we didn't feature on the story, but for example, today the Yukons and part of the Northwest Territories only internet feed, fiber feed, was accidentally cut for the better part of a day. And this is the second time in about a year. So, yeah, there's some talk there about they've got to do a backup line. But again, it affected everything. You know, people couldn't use ATMs or debit machines or stuff like that. So, it, you know.
Yeah, we'll actually talk about something similar for the local story later on.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, definitely some challenges. And that's why I was thinking that local story is also, we're going to talk about that. So, alrighty, moving on, BlackBerry, they came out with a new smartphone, Derek.
They did. Where? Oh, I closed that tab.
You closed that tab.
There it is.
Your tab, though. There it is.
There it is. Yeah. So BlackBerry has pulled back the curtain on the DTEK, that's DTEK 50 smartphone a few days ago. It was leaked, and then probably by BlackBerry, and then a couple hours later, a bunch of journalists that seemingly already had the device. The embargo got lifted, and so all of a sudden we started seeing all this official information from BlackBerry and being released out. And so this is a $299 US phone. I would expect it to go for $349, $359 Canadian, maybe a little bit more. Yeah, maybe $360, $370 But anyway, and a gentleman at Engadget named Chris Velasco wrote up his day with it, which was kind of neat. So ultimately, this is actually based off of a Chinese reference design from a company called TCL. The same reference design is being used for Alcatel's Idol 4 phone. That's still not released. So somehow the BlackBerry DTEK 50 might actually make it to market first. But it's got a 5.2-inch screen, 1080p resolution, Qualcomm Snapdragon 617 chipset, 3 gigabytes of RAM, 13-megapixel camera, and a fairly slim 2600 milliamp hour battery. There's also a convenience key on the right that you can actually assign different commands to. Only has 16 gigabytes of internal storage. However, you can beef that up with a micro SD card. I think that goes up to 256 gigabytes on top of that. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
So this, I'd say the specs give it a mid-range to flagship, you know, somewhere between there. Spec, certainly 3 gigabytes of RAM is great. The battery could be a little bit stronger, or it could be a little bit bigger. And same with the Qualcomm Snapdragon 617. They could have used one of the 800 series chips. But for the most part, the time Chris Velasco spent with the phone was pretty positive for the most part. which was nice.
And I guess even BlackBerry's company spokespersons, they're calling it a fleet device. Like the idea is for corporations and that. And as he writes here, if it finds a foothold with regular people, great. If not, so be it, as long as the corporations keep snapping them up. And I think, that's where BlackBerry's really got to look. If they're going to, even though John Chen says, they're going to bail out of the hardware business if it's not profitable. If they can find a niche there that they can continue to throw these out, especially, they're not having to do the design now.
Yep.
So they can focus on software and that, and, they can have some say in some of it. But I think, that might be a good option for them. As I've said countless times, they have to focus on the corporations and the niche market.
Yeah.
I really think unless something extraordinary happened, they've lost the consumer space.
Certainly for the most part, yes. I mean, one of the nice things about moving to Android is that they don't have to worry anymore about necessarily designing phones that are actually targeted at consumers. They can go to a TCL and say, hey, give us a really decent but not flagship reference design. Yeah, sure, this looks cool. Okay, we'll throw our software on this. We'll make sure all the, all the drivers work and all of that. And then we're going to throw all of our special BlackBerry Flair on top, the Detect security software, which seems pretty neat and is close to that device that Edward Snowden and another gentleman designed for an iPhone recently that actually tells you, whether your phone's sending data without your notification or without your you knowing or not. There, that sort of thing, which is great. The BlackBerry Hub, which I know a lot of people love, and you can pry it from their cold, dead hands.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, mostly stock Android, which makes it much easier to upgrade. They've been, I think the Priv already has Android 6.0, which is way, way faster than most other Android vendors or manufacturers have gone ahead with moving to Android 6.0. So that's actually a good thing. Other than the small battery, there really wasn't much to complain about here.
The
naming scheme, whatever. DTEC 50.
Name's
okay.
The name.
Yeah.
Let me ask you because as some regular listeners of the podcast know, your wife's a big BlackBerry fan.
Yes, she is.
Do you think this is something she would warm up to?
I've been pitching it to her because she needs to get rid of her Leap, and we're moving her to a new network soon anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The back to school specials are on, so we might be able to take advantage of one of those soon. I'm waiting for this thing to actually get released and see who has it. I know TELUS is supposed to have it. I'm hoping Kudo, their discount brand, also has it. Because if so, and even if we need to do Tab Plus type plan or whatever, I think this might do it for her and even for somebody like me. I mean, I don't have a problem with BlackBerry. Well, I won't use BlackBerry Messenger. We talked about that a few weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
But everything else seems fine. So I guess my only potential hindrance would be is I'm on a flagship type device right now with the second gen Moto X. So if the Snapdragon 617 and a smaller battery are going to hold me back, that's not really a trade-off I'm willing to make at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got tons of other phones to choose from. I won't go Samsung. I'm tired of Samsung. But whether it's the HTC M9 or one of the new Nexus devices that are rumored to be coming out soon, I think Sailfish and Moonfish and Jailfish and Lionfish and whatever all these other fishes are.
That's a lot of fish.
Yeah, there are. They have like four devices in development right now. All the code names are something fish. So Sailfish, I know for sure is one of them because I thought, isn't there a Sailfish OS being developed right now?
Right.
Whatever. I've got options and I can wait a little bit longer than she can to get onto a more reliable network.
Right. Perfect. Perfect. Okay.
Oh, but she definitely does not want to leave the BlackBerry Hub. And I actually tried looking for a third party solution to replace it.
Yeah.
And the only one I found, so listen, app developers, the only other hub type app I found in the Android Play Store has very, very bad reviews, has not been updated in a year or two. So if someone else wants to bother putting together an app for like a couple of bucks that does what BlackBerry Hub does and puts all your conversations in one place, just like a unified inbox for your email, go for it, because there's definitely a market for that.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's what I've heard. People who use it, they love that hub, and I like what it does.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's a great idea.
More of that.
I mean, I've been searching for months for a good email app that will unify everything, because most of it, it doesn't matter where it went to. I'm going to email it in a very certain, or I'm going to respond to my emails in a very certain way. It doesn't matter which account it came to, or who it's from. I can tell by who it's from, where it came to, and what the reason is, and respond appropriately. So I just need a unified inbox for everything. And if I had one for Twitter and Facebook and Skype and, you know, who knows what else, and Wire, which we'll talk about next, great. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay, speaking of Wire, messaging service Wire goes open source. This is your story. Roll with it.
So I actually tested this out, a year and a half ago when they first launched.
You talking about it.
Yeah, me and some coworkers tried it out. Very, very slick, very minimalist UI, but very, very pretty and nice and fast. But just not a lot of uptake. They're still around though, and now they are. So now they offer encrypted text, voice, and audio calls, and I think video's coming soon too. If not, then I'm pretty sure they're there, but maybe they're not encrypted. And now the service is actually going open source. The source code has been posted on GitHub. It has various bits and pieces from the native iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac OS X, soon to be Mac OS apps, plus the Linux compatible web app as well. Apparently, it's gotten pretty popular for its data privacy promises, and now it's inviting developers, hackers, tinkerers, etc., to build their own Wire clients, review the code, help contribute, really build a good open source community there. The co-founder of Wire, Alan Durich, said open source was always part of the initial plan, just took some time to get to this stage. They decided that taking the open source path, because transparency and community engagement is of utmost importance for any product that has security at its core. I agree. And open sourcing the full Wire client code base represents an important milestone for them. They can imagine that in the weeks, months, and years to come, that an open source secure messenger client could be appealing in an Internet of Things paradigm, digital health, and automotive industry too. Again, I agree. This is actually great. I mean, I'm wondering whether companies like Olio, for instance, could actually take this and build like a secure private Slack type thing, you know, a chat room or a group chat, or, you know, I don't know the ins and outs. So that's something I'd have to ask one of the actual developers at work. But, you know, if they're looking at digital health, automotive industry, et cetera, the use cases are many.
Yeah, I guess my only question is how's the funding? It says free here, but who are they being backed by? And, you know, they say they're not going to sell the advertising. It's always nice to know. And they don't really, it's not as clear as I would like to see here.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
I'm just
that.
Looking near the bottom. I'm sure I'll find it, but it's just the initial, when I look, I always kind of like to know what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of my big things lately is like, okay, that's fine. You know, you're an app or whatever. How are you going to make money? Because investing my time and my effort into the service is, you know, am I the product? Who's the product? Where's the product? How much does it cost? Like, it's, yeah, I agree. I know that they've had funding. I don't recall what the business model is.
Right. Yeah. It's something they should be a little bit more clear about, I think.
Yeah. Their Medium blog only goes back to March, which is certainly not when this launched, but there's a whole bunch of really cool stuff in here. Apparently you can do sketches and draw in Wire, which is neat. You can send GIFs.
Yeah, no, it looks like an interesting thing. I'm just finished downloading the client for Windows. And I'll HD group calls now.
I'm wondering if you and I could use this instead of Skype.
Yeah, maybe. It may be something we'll have to look at.
If I can pump the audio out elsewhere, then why not? So you know what? I'm going to download it as well right after the call, and we'll see what audio options I have.
It'll be good to see.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of Olio, so don't you love the way we're just flowing tonight?
It's going really
topic
well.
Just flows to topic, which just flows to topic. So anyway, we're going to have an ad from our sponsor, which of course is Olio. So here it is now, and we thank them for their support.
Do you have an idea for a mobile app, a problem that can be solved with software, two or three pieces of software that need to be integrated in order to speed up your business, or maybe just a website that needs to be freshened up? If so, you can turn to Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and builders of custom web and mobile applications powering some of Canada's largest brands, from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, to Home Depot, to College Pro, and Ellison Travel and Tours. Olio offers custom web and mobile applications, interface design, e-commerce development, a web platform, and Olio is also a Shopify partner, enabling your business to get the most out of Shopify. For a free consultation on how Olio can help you, call 226-785-0420, email derek@oliodigitallabs.com, or visit oliodigitallabs.com/contact.html and fill out the form to tell them about your project. That's oliodigitallabs.com.
And we're back. And again, thank you to Olio for their support of the podcast. I also would be remiss if I also didn't thank techdose.ca for the loan of this Snowball Blue mic I'm using to make my voice sound fabulous. Yeah, I need all the help I can get. Okay, I got no way to go from Olio to Snopes.com. I don't know if you can think of a better way.
Fact. Olio Digital Labs is not encrypted. Well, let's check Snopes. Hey, turns out that's false. That actually has an extended validation SSL certificate that they bought through CleverHost.
Ka-ching. There we go. Ka-ching. I love it. All right. I found this on The Guardian. You know, it makes an interesting article. I like it because it's a little bit behind the scenes. Not a lot of people know how long Snopes has been around the internet and stuff like that. But it also kind of shows these days where everyone can be a reporter and everyone can publish. There's a lot of fake stuff going around. And last couple of weeks, I don't know if people have noticed my Facebook feed. I've been kind of really hammering down on people. It's like, dude, check Snopes, or please check Snopes. It's not there. And they're not the only ones, but they're one of the oldest. But it's a fascinating article behind the scenes of this guy who worked for Digital Labs, and he basically ran it out of his home for years. Started with UFO stuff, and now it's a little bit of everything. And it's, you know, it's true. There's so many sources. The problem is so many people think, you know, one of the largest ones I find is satire sites like The Onion and that, and they'll take stuff. But then you have the presidential campaign down there with Mr. Trump, and some of the stuff he says, which he actually says, you're going, there's no way. What are your comments about Snopes?
I like it. I forget to check it, unfortunately. So there are absolutely, I should visit it more often, because even most recently, and the problem was that this was highly plausible. There was People magazine where allegedly Donald Trump had said that if he ever ran for president, it would be for the Republican Party because those voters are a bunch of idiots, basically. And I was like, wow, he called
it.
And that's the thing. He would say it. And thankfully, Frank, who is supposed to be on the show soon, hey, there's your reminder to reach out to him.
There we go. We got to reach out to him again.
He's been on the show before, Mike Batista, and will be on the show again. He's like, this is fake. I was like, damn it. It's unfortunate because, man, that is exactly the sort of thing he would say. And it was in People magazine. Well, of course it was in People magazine. Like, why wouldn't it be? Because, of course, he would talk to them because he thinks he's important and famous and whatever else. So, I really should check Snopes.com more often. Fortunately for me, I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, my God, I read it on the internet. Therefore, it's true. Most things I'm like, Like, it's just...
Oh, I know.
You know, like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, it's just, I'm like, yeah. I don't care whether this is true or not. I'm just moving on with my life.
Yeah, exactly. But it's true what you say. There's so many stories now. You go, there's no way. Like, I think about since post-Brexit, the fact that Theresa May had Boris Johnson to be her foreign secretary. Like, that's something 3 weeks before those who follow that sort of stuff would laugh at.
Yeah.
And it actually happened.
But like, yeah, but that actually happened, which was ridiculous. But anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it just shows you it's worth checking more often.
It is, absolutely. Now, there are some other sites like factcheck.org, truthorfiction.com, mm-hmm. politifact.com is a good one. They go a little overboard sometimes, but you know, regardless, there are other ones out there. But Snopes.com is certainly the most popular one, the original, you know, the originator. And it's, yeah, if you're not sure, just go check. Or if you exactly. think something's too hard, you know, too crazy to believe, or you see it posted somewhere without any attribution, without any link to an original source or anything like that, check it. Go to Snopes, Snopes.com, and check it. Or check one of the other three I just rhymed off.
And if you do that, Uncle Stuart and Uncle Derek will be very happy with you.
Yes, we will. And you'll get a lollipop.
You'll get a lollipop or a gold star.
Snopes.com says that's not actually true.
Wow. Damn it. Damn it.
I know.
All right. Now we're moving on to something. And this is very true. But, okay, Derek, you run a hosting company and, you know, awesome service, clever host. And you talk about unlimited storage and
yeah.
stuff like this. So, you know, but, you know, I'm sure on those servers you have, you know, the drives sometimes probably get a bit full. Well, have I got a deal for you?
Guess what? You do.
Our good friends at Samsung, they have a nice new SSD really designed for servers. Okay, you know what? You want to know how big this puppy is? 15.56 terabytes with a T.
Oh, that makes me all warm and fuzzy inside.
All warm and I fuzzy get a, now here's the part that's going to make you cold drive. Again. Here's the part that's going to make you cold again. Because it's brand new tech, it's only around 10,000 US.
Oh, that's like $1 million. Like
exactly. $1 million Canadian. But this is something interesting. They basically broke the 10 terabyte barrier because apparently spinning drives seem to be capped at right now. I love some of the stats. So the drive's small size and huge storage capacity means you'll be able to outfit a standard 42U server rack with 1,008 of these puppies.
Wow.
For a cool 15,482 terabytes. So that's 15 petabytes. So for those guys who didn't know what was after petabytes, after that's exabytes, by the way. There's your lesson for today. Only cost you $10,080,000. But I'm sure Samsung will give you a deal.
Probably not. I'm just trying to figure out. So calculate cost per gigabyte. I'm wondering what that is now. Here we go. Is this an actual calculator? Oh, I don't think I should download that.
Don't you have something, a calculator on your...
Of course I do, but okay, so 15.56 times 1,024. Okay, so, and divide that by 10 grand. Is that $1.59 a gigabyte? Yeah, I guess that sounds about right.
Yep.
Scary, that's not bad.
Yeah, I still, like I said, here's my old man hat. I still remember when IBM released the first IBM PC and they had the 10 megabyte drive option for businesses. You could have that, Derek, for the low, low price through your IBM store of $5,000 back in 1980 something. Yeah.
Well, it's worth like $3 million now.
Exactly. So, yeah.
So I'm literally just throwing numbers out there.
I know. It's hilarious, though, how the price of data goes down.
And we
keep finding ways of filling it.
Yeah. Now, $1.59 per gigabyte is actually high, unfortunately, these days. Yeah. You can get a 256 gigabyte SSD or 512 gigabyte SSD for less than $1 a gigabyte now,
which is
great.
It shows, though, but every time new stuff comes out, the tech, you know, the price eventually drops.
Yep.
And, of course, the only thing with something of this size, you're going to want to buy two because, you know, backing up. backing up that, you're to the point now where you're thinking, yeah, you just got to run a mirror, because if you had to call, you know, we're at the point if it goes down, you're just going to, you know, if you've got an offsite backup somewhere, you're trucking it to the data center. You're not going to send it over the wire.
No, certainly not that much. If you got it, that's like if you're in a position where you need to seed backups or something like that, yeah, you are literally going to ship that by UPS or FedEx or Purelator or what have you.
Well, I always remember the story when the first images NASA released to Google for from Hubble and all that, they were like gigs and gigs and gigs, and they calculated how long it would take even over a pretty fast pipe, and they actually trucked the drives from Florida or from Houston to Google's data center. They actually did.
Forget
it. Was faster.
Yeah, just literally just like, forget it. It's not, this isn't worth it.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no, but I love this tongue-in-cheek offer. Yeah, so if you did this, like I said, 15 petabytes of storage to presumably store a spare copy of the known universe. So, obviously, someone's figured out that's only 15 petabytes now. I think it's a bit more.
I guess so. I think it's a little bit more, but, you know,
a little bit more.
That's still a ton of data. Like that's
a ton of data.
Oh, man. Okay, so... Yeah, no, I'm not even going to do the memory lane thing. I remember 4 gigabyte hard drives and thinking like, oh my gosh, this is huge. I remember my 400 megabyte hard drive in my 386 computer before that with a blazing fast 33 megahertz processor. It's just things have really come along.
Every time we still go insane. It's so insane enough, you're probably going to want to stop and have a drink. Speaking of... See? You see what I did there? Isn't that great? I'm on a roll. God help me. God help the audience. In Ontario, we get our booze through our good friends at the LCBO. Many people may criticize them, but they do a pretty healthy profit. One of the complaints people have, particularly if you're in smaller centers than that, is that they don't have the entire selection. So if you're like me and a fine connoisseur of certain Scottish water, you know, distilled north of the border, what one can get in Toronto isn't always what one can get in London. Well, yes. no fears, boys and girls. The LCBO will now do delivery. They not only deliver it to the store, but for an additional fee, and our good friends at Canada Post, they'll deliver it right to your house. How cool is that?
It is pretty cool. As soon as I told a few people about this, they're like, I'm making an order right now. Like, they were ready to go. And it's like, there are several LCBO locations near me or on my way to work or what have you. Mm-hmm. But just knowing that I can just place an order and it'll just be there when I get home.
Yeah.
That's a really nice feeling, because that's when I want it. I don't want to have to go stop somewhere, look for the particular bottle or bottles of stuff that I want, hope it's there, you know, hope it's in stock, and just let me order it and just send it to my house. And this is exactly what that would accomplish. Now,
they'll also allow you to send it to the store.
But it takes a lot longer.
Yeah, a little bit longer. But, you know, if you feel like waiting, it's a $50 minimum order. But, yeah, because one of the things I love is they have an excellent app for iOS, and I believe it's the same app on Android, which allows you to search by local areas. But they can't really do transfers or things like that. And there's stuff like that are in the big stores in Toronto, the Somerville stores and Summerhill stores, that you just can't get here. It is nice to be able to do that now when you see, you know, some really nice, unique brands and stuff like that, that if they don't have here, and, you know, particularly when it's some of these like rare brands, you're going to be paying more than $50 for, you know, for one item anyway.
Yeah. You can absolutely satisfy the minimum with often just one product or two products.
Exactly. And the fact that they offer free delivery to the store, you know, it's good. It's like they're essentially doing a transfer now.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. And I like that concept. And, you know, I'm a big supporter. You know, I realize we pay a lot, especially in taxes.
But the selection is fantastic, though.
It's
like,
nice
really.
To have this selection. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's one thing I will always defend, is that the selection at the LCBO, comparatively speaking with pretty much anywhere in the U.S., is so, so much better here. The quality of the alcohol or the drinks is better here. The variety is better. you know, you go to a little corner store in North Carolina and you're going to see some vodka that you have never heard of before.
Yep.
And it might be good, it might be bad. You literally don't know because you have never heard of it before.
Exactly.
So, you know, you want what your favorite celebrity, you know, you want your favorite celebrity's brand of vodka that they're pushing now or what have you. Mm-hmm. You're better off just going to the LCBO and because it's probably going to be there, whether it's 50 Cent's vodka or Jay-Z's vodka or Puff Daddy's beer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, he probably makes Hennessy or something like that, you know, a cognac type thing.
You know, it's also fun to go through their website. And if you sort single malts by price and reverse order, so, you know, the top one's a $4,000 one. They don't have a picture of the bottle. But how about this? A Ballyview Tongue 1509 single malt, $851. So it's from one barrel. Very rare. Yeah, that's probably a little bit over my budget, but there's a few things here I could definitely.
I'm just not. I'm not willing to spend that much money.
No, neither am I. $100 fine.
Yeah. So now you give me. Is Glenfiddich or Glenfiddich is that a single malt or is
that a
blend?
Good single malt. Yeah, they've got a Malt Masters edition, which I've heard very good things about, for $105.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's getting closer to a reasonable price. Glenlivet, 12-year-old single malt scotch, $58.45. I'll pay that.
Yeah, those are good, and those are good brands.
And those are price good. Range. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
You want a little bit older? The next for 3 years, $76.95.
Yep. But you can go ahead. all different sorts. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I said, most of your good stuff's going to be over $50, so I'm going to be right there.
But then you save that for the special occasion.
Exactly. Exactly. I got to stop looking at this. I'm getting thirsty.
Ooh, the Aberlour.
A Beaumont 12-year-old nine.
Yeah.
$59.95. See?
Oh, I was looking at Aberlour Abunad. I don't know. Scotch whiskey, $99.95.
Okay. Last one, because we're going to move on or else we're going to have, we're going to have the authorities on us for promoting drinking. How about a Ballyview? Which they make a nice stuff, Caribbean cask, 14-year-old Scotch whiskey, finished in an ex-rum cask for added character and smoothness.
Mm.
I love the description. The dram pours a shimmering amber color and offers intense aromas of burnt sugar, oatmeal, brown butter, apricot, and citrus. The palate is rich and creamy with flavors of tropical fruit, cinnamon, dried fruit, and citrus, followed by an enduring fruity finish. All yours for $140.
No. I'm not a big fan of Caribbean rum, so I would just that part in particular turns me off.
Yeah, well, there you go. But see, this is what I like. You have a different selection. It's not just one bottle.
Yes, right. It's not that's the only scotch there. It's like there's 50 other scotch whiskeys.
Exactly, exactly.
And lots of Canadian whiskey.
Okay, moving on before we go pour ourselves a drink and get silly, even more silly, I should say. There was an event at the London Roundhouse this week, and some people wrote about it. Larry Cornelius? I can never.
Cornies
wrote a nice little opinion piece on it, and I recognize a name in here, Derek.
It's mine,
namely you. So I'm gonna let you roll about it. This is good because I feel the pain of rural broadband because my mom's just west of Kamoka, and they're still waiting.
Oh my gosh, are you serious?
Yeah, they had to switch. Oh. Now they're with a consortium with Rogers apparently. So God help.
Back to Rogers. Okay, well, anyway, the SWIFT network, which is the Southwestern Ontario Integrated Fiber Technology Project, they've been pushing for several years now to build a fiber optic backbone network across all of Southwestern Ontario. Any community that's not covered now by existing telco, small or large, they would get hooked up. And they were asking the province of Ontario and the federal government to kick in 2/3, 1/3 each, and they've actually come through and decided to do that. So all in all, this is a $281 million project. It is going to hook up your Paisleys and Chesleys and...
hopefully Kamokas.
And Kamokas, outer Kamoka. And pretty much every other town in between, all the way up to... Oh, I would say Lion's Head because Lion's Head's actually covered by it was M Telecom. Now it's East Link. Right. But a whole bunch of remote small villages in between with a fiber optic, a backbone fiber optic connection to a school or a hospital or something
community
like that.
Or something like
yeah,
that. Yeah,
community center in the region or in the town, village. And then they are going to partner up with a private company, an actual telco, to build out the actual infrastructure within the village or the town. And right. So David Bilson at Art Traction actually recommended the Larry Speak to me. Thank you, David. Much appreciated. And so I gave him some thoughts on why the government essentially had to get involved and do this as mm-hmm. opposed to Bell, Rogers, TELUS, etc. And one part in here, I mean, for the most part, yes, this is great. I don't have a problem with my tax dollars being used on this. One part Larry left out from my POV here was that the I don't think Swift is actually going far enough. I don't want private companies to be in charge of putting together the last mile. I really wanted to see Swift do the full the whole shebang and build an open access network that anybody could then compete on by price, service, you know, support, etc.
Exactly.
As opposed to hoping Rogers, Bell, Start, ExecuLink, Quadro, Tucker Smith, Hey Communications decide to get in there and actually build out that last mile. The mayor of Chatham-Kent, Randy Hope, is also a little disappointed because Chatham-Kent sits just above the population threshold
yep.
where this will get built. So Blenheim, Wallaceburg, towns like that may not get connected. They could probably figure out another solution, especially if the fiber runs near Blenheim or Wallaceburg. You know, get one of those companies to hook it up, but and take the connection to the town. But a big step forward for sure. It's going to connect areas with at least 4 people per square kilometer.
Yep.
That's a good swath of southwestern Ontario.
Exactly. And I agree with you. I really, I think this is something good. I'd like to see more of a defined timeline because I know a lot of people are waiting, and that's. The comments, the articles I've seen, basically that's the first thing. And I also agree with you on it needs to be a nationalist all the way, including the last mile, because, you know, that's the way Bell in the States and Bell here in Canada were
you
funded originally.
In
the Bell
States?
Network. The feds funded it.
You mean AT&T in the States?
AT&T, my apologies. Yeah. I'm thinking of the original Bell system.
Well, yeah. They do refer to AT&T as Ma Bell.
Ma Bell, exactly. But in like Bell Canada here, you know, a lot of government money was used to make that network up across the country because there would have been areas which it wouldn't be reached. And, you know, as we've seen in the Yukon, you know, there's still issues with that because you can't get a private company in. They're not willing to pay for it. So.
Yep.
I think this is an awesome idea. I really hope we'll hear more of this. I've been following the Swift network for a while, so hopefully we'll hear more. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Stuff we like. I have a new webcam. I've been playing around with, as some people know, I build model kits, and I've been playing around with some YouTube videos and stuff like that. And I had a very, very old webcam, and it just wasn't really working for me. So I looked around, did some searching, see what other people are using, and I ended up getting this really nice Logitech 930E webcam. Really good little camera. Works really, really well. HD capable. So I can go up to 1080p. More importantly, it works on both the PC and the Mac. You'll be surprised the number of big web cameras that don't have Mac controls.
Mm-hmm.
They'll work, but you can't just, you know, use them right out. Because there's some base drivers, but, you know, this thing has a digital zoom. You might want to adjust the brightness in that. So fortunately, this one, Logitech, does make software that works on both.
Cool.
I've actually only used it on my Mac so far. I've been very impressed. I'm just using the built-in QuickTime player, so I can record up to 720p. Haven't played with 1080 yet. But at some point I want to get a little bit more into some of the video stuff and stuff like that. So again, it's up there in price. It was around I got it at Canon Computers, I believe, for $129 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's up there. But again, webcams last a long time. The other thing I like about this one is it actually has a screw mount for a tripod.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah, so I've got my traditional tripod, and I bought one of those little, what are they called? The little Gorilla Grip ones that have the little three
legs. Yeah, Gorilla Pod, monopod.
Yeah, well, it's like a monopod, but it's actually got three legs.
Oh, okay.
And I can wrap it around. So I've got it wrapped around a paint rack, and it works really, really well. I should have the box here somewhere. Here it is. Look at that. The unwrapping and everything. Yeah, it's actually an original Gorilla Pad by Joby.
Oh, cool.
They made these years ago again. Got it for about $25 a can of computers again. So another story I recommend. And yeah, this little thing works great. I'm very impressed with it so far. The picture quality, it just blows me away. If you've been using a cheap webcam or an older one for a couple of years, like I had on the PC and that, it's just, yeah, there's no comparison. So definitely recommended. Okay, what do you have this week?
I have Sandstorm, and I don't mean the song by Darude. I mean what they call themselves, an open source operating system for personal and private clouds. Essentially, what this is a really easy way to build your own cloud of apps, I might say that way, running on your own hardware. And essentially giving you the ability to do everything you can do for free out there, whether it's Google Docs or Trello or Slack, you know, chat and that sort of thing, without any expertise on how to actually install any open source alternatives like EtherCalc, EtherPad, Draw.io, WeCan, which is a Kanban board alternative to Trello, RocketChat, which is a pretty cool free chat app that looks a lot like Slack, works a lot like Slack. And you can install it on your own server and be in full control over the data and over the apps themselves and who gets access and all that other fun stuff. So I'm more and more, I'm getting wary of data privacy laws and what they will let the RCMP or the OPP or local police, or local police here is OPP or London police, I'm walking around, do with my devices and my data. And ultimately, I want full control. It's my stuff. And thankfully, I'm in a position where I could, you know, technically do all this myself or, you know, install all this myself. But Sandstorm makes it super easy to do it for me, instead of me having to sit at the command line and go install, you know, apt-get install, Python pip or whatever. I can just click a couple of buttons and EtherCalc, which is an open source spreadsheet software, gets installed. EtherPad, which was actually the spin-off. When Google Wave died, they spun off the code for the real-time collaboration. And that actually turned into Etherpad. So Etherpad's still going. It's still an open source project. And that's baked in here. And a whole bunch of other things. So I'm seriously debating installing it on a VPS I already have. And yeah, moving some of my data out. I use Google Apps right now for my personal stuff. I might stop doing that. And I know, or like, you know, at least stop using it for my email and that sort of thing. And I know that that will have implications, but I think I'm prepared for that.
Yeah, it's something definitely to look at. It's certainly a lot of different options here, different apps. They call them grains, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Well, the apps are called apps, and then when you start up a new instance of an app, or a new document or something like that, that's a grain, yes.
Okay.
A grain in the sandstorm.
I like it. No, that's pretty cool. Something to definitely look at. You'll have to keep us in the loop.
If you don't want to spend, you know, the money on your own virtual private server or a cloud virtual machine, you can actually get a hosted version with Sandstorm. There's a free version that will give you 200 megabytes of storage and 5 grains. $9 a month with 10 gigs of storage and unlimited grains, or $24 a month US, 100 gigabytes of storage and of course unlimited grains. But you also get a different power user type account. So, you know, if you just want to try it out, go for it. There's a free version that you don't even need to pay for.
Cool. All right. Excellent. Okay. Our last little bit called what we are up to lately. I already kind of alluded to this. I've been playing around with this new webcam, starting to play around with some YouTube content, set up a channel for my modeling videos and stuff like that. Just playing around.
Cool.
I also finished, transferring at least the core stuff for two websites for the IPMS London and the London Scale Model Show club sites. Moved them onto CleverHost, so that's gone very well. So
Yay.
probably after the show, we're going to move the name servers and we'll see if I've missed anything. Because there's no greater test than production.
Yep.
No, it's worked very well, nice and smooth. So that'll be good, and we'll save quite a bit. I know we didn't have an ad for CleverHost, but I should point out that CleverHost actually they do domains, including .ca domains, at a very reasonable price, and that went very smoothly as well. So definitely something to look at. What are you working on?
I've been trying to tie up a bunch of projects recently, as I've mentioned before. We just had an Olio Fun Day on Friday. Neat.
What's that? Details.
Okay. Well, we were supposed to do archery tag in the morning, starting at 10:30,
right.
Go up for lunch somewhere, and then do East Park Golf Gardens in the afternoon for bumper cars, mini golf, go-karts, etc.
Cool.
Unfortunately, we had some fires to put out Friday morning, so we rescheduled archery tag for the afternoon. The company still paid for lunch, but we did not go out and eat somewhere.
Right.
So things got shifted around, but we did end up doing archery tag, and that was a lot of fun. We went to the Hood archery tag down in the South End near White Oaks Mall. And it was a good time. I've got the bruises to prove it.
Did anyone shoot you in the eye? That's the important
thing. No, nobody shot me in the eye. A coworker thought they hit me in the privates, but they actually hit me in the stomach, so that was okay.
That's good.
But yeah, I've got some bruises on my arm, actually from recoil on the bow.
On the bows, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's
my,
what we'll do it.
My armband was just missing this one piece right near the Buddha's head on my arm, inside of my forearm. So anyways, a lot of fun, and we're going to make up for the East Park Golf Gardens, hopefully sometime this week or next. We're just going to, if we run into a slow day where there's nothing going on, nothing pressing happening, we're just going to bug out of the office and just
take
off. So anyway, I took care of a bunch of other stuff recently, so I'm going to focus now on finishing CleverHost's new website. I've started going to the gym again, which is nice. So I went last night, pumping some tough iron there. And then after I get CleverHost's new website up and running, focus on launching sslcheap.co.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Looking forward to that.
And just before we started tonight, I got a notification from Elementary OS, which is the Linux distro I run, that while all my software was up to date, I can now upgrade from Ubuntu 14.04 LTS to Ubuntu 16.04 LTS.
What happened to 15.04?
It wasn't an LTS. They don't do long-term support. They only do long-term support releases every 2 years.
Ah, okay.
So everything in between is more like a Mac OS 10.3, 10.4. This is an actual LTS edition, and that's what Linux Mint and therefore Elementary run on. So,
I have to reinforce my general ignorance of Linux. I know enough to be dangerous.
Elementary OS is a very pretty version of Linux that runs on top of Ubuntu. I think it has some Linux Mint baked in as well, which also runs on top of Ubuntu. But yeah, it's very Mac-like in the interface, and some really nice fonts. They definitely focus on look and feel more so than anything else, but lots of stability fixes. At this time last year, I would have said everything is great, but if it goes into sleep for a while, coming back out of sleep takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case anymore. Now the computer is extremely responsive. I got up to Elementary 0.3.2 a few days ago, and where I was on 0.3.0, and everything's great, and I know 0.4 beta 2 is out right now, so I'm looking forward to that as well once it goes into production.
Cool. Yeah, I was looking at some screenshots. You're right, it does look very Mac OS.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of it.
but in the nicest ways possible. Not the cruft I could deal without.
I may have to look at that on a VM at some point.
Yeah,
so.
It's nice.
Okay, I think we're about done. Do you have anything else, my friend?
No, I'm good.
Okay, so am I. It's still warm weather here. Hopefully.
It was hot today.
I know. Only 56 days till the first day of fall. Not that I'm counting.
I know you're counting. I know you're. I'm not trying to complain that it's hot. It was considering how cool it was this morning.
Yeah,
especially
it's really
because
been
of the cloud.
Last few days.
Yeah, it was really cloudy this morning. I was like, oh, okay, it's going to be a pretty fresh day. That's great because I want to go outside and tear up a bunch of stuff in the yard. Man, it got hot.
On the patio this morning, and yeah, it was fine that I started to get warm. So
yeah, my wife thought I had dumped water on my head. That's how much I was sweating.
Oh dear. So there you go. So all right, well, take it easy. Don't work too much in that.
No, I didn't. Yard. No, I didn't. I took it easy. I took the kids back inside. I was like, it's too hot.
Let's go back inside. Exactly. Yeah. So, all right. I just want to remind everyone, don't forget to review us on iTunes, Google Play, wherever else you get your podcast. Retweet us on our Twitter's accounts. And, oh, yeah, I should add, I still got to make that Facebook group. That's terrible. I got to do that. I will try and do that this week. But anyway, retweet us. We tweet about new episodes. Share them on Facebook, Google+. Tell a friend. Tell an enemy. Whatever. I'll see if I can get Franck on the show maybe for next week.
Yeah.
We can find out what he's doing with his new job because, you know, he's doing science now, which is, you know, kind of scary in its own way, those of us who know Franck. So
neuroscience.
Science. But anyway. Science. Yeah, okay. Certain people a certain age will get that. If you don't, ask someone older. Ask a responsible.
No, then you have to go, science.
Yeah. Science. Yeah, exactly. All right. So for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 80 for Monday, August 1st, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And I'm still Derek Silva.
Excellent. Thank you and be well. Thank you.